A character planted in the audience that you'd never expect to be on the payroll. And when she plays her big scene, she creates more heat than you could ever imagine. Now here's the secret. She's a stunt granny.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stunt Granny TNA Audio. I am Dusty Giebing, and before we get into the festivities, I just wanted to take a quick moment and just say that we lost our cat this weekend. One of our cats, my favorite, Dreamer, and I wanted to dedicate this audio in his memory. And before I lose it, I will change subjects here, but just know that you're in our thoughts, Dreamer, and I'll see you soon, buddy. But joining me here today, as usual, Matt Fanatic. Happier times for Matt. Your house is chaos right now, is that right?
Yes. Circle of life. Dreamer's gone, and I just brought my daughter home from the hospital after being born early. And I can't wait for another 5 years or so. So me being in control, I can push her on top of the Stunt Granny universe ahead of everybody else. Get out of the way.
Yes, yes. They're precious until they hit about their teen years, and then they won't know you at all. And you won't know them, and they'll be strangers in the same house. But that won't be for another 10 or 15 years, so enjoy the time you have while you have it, I guess. So, all right, well, like I said, this is Stunt Granny Audio. We are focusing on the February 23rd edition of TNA Impact, but before we do that, it is time for Ask a Random Question, and this is easy. My question to you is, 1 week ago today, you were at the WWE pay-per-view. Live and in person. What can you share about your experience, the live WWE experience?
Well, we had a good time. Me and my buddy went. He lives in the Milwaukee area. We said, if the weather's good, we'll go. So great weather in Wisconsin for February.
Always great.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So scalped some tickets off some hustlers out on the street. I think in the time we were there, I think we saw like three attractive women in the whole 20,000 seat arena. So that's a combination of Wisconsin and WWE for you. I really liked the show. I know some people had a lot of complaints about, oh, how could you take Santino Marella seriously? But being there live, he was the most over guy before the show. And he was definitely the most over guy during the show. And I get how maybe if I was watching on TV, I'd go, I didn't think he was going to win. But even sitting in the stands, I think most people didn't think he was going to win. But you pick a guy to cheer for. And I've never been any place to see a reaction as big as when he hit the Cobra on Daniel Bryan in that chamber. And the people just went crazy. Like, I guess I haven't been to the right show, but That was very cool. John Cena, people hate on him, but when the main event came around, you can tell there's something about him that makes him the number one guy. Like, there's just a different feeling when he's out there. There was a lot of CM Punk chants that night, but nothing compared to John Cena. And when you see the people doing the Cena sucks things, but are grinning ear to ear when they're doing it, there's really no hatred in their in the way they're doing it, it's kind of overblown.
Okay. As for the Santino thing, it's nice when you can get lost in the moment like that. For a second, your brain shuts off and you believe that it could possibly happen. So that's what wrestling should be about, and there should be more moments like it. I posted on the Torch board the other day, I don't like Santino, I don't like the dumb comedy, but he's so over, you can't deny it. You have to push him.
And the, the thing is, like you see that happen, and it kind of proves the theory that, you know, you can take anybody, and with the certain type of build, the right atmosphere, you can get them over for a night, whether it was, I don't know what the year was, probably like 98 when like Funaki and Brooklyn Brawler beat Triple H in the same night. Those guys got over for one night. I mean, it's possible to get anybody over, pretty much anybody.
Yep.
If they got a little charisma and the guy on the other side of the ring is willing to give them a little bit instead of burying them.
Sure, sure. The other point I wanted to touch on is my main complaint was I didn't like the Cena match on last. I felt like that should have went on third with the chamber matches going first and fifth. Did you get a feel for that? Is that kind of accurate or did it go over better live the way it was?
I thought it went over well live, and the only thing I thought was for the two finishes of the chamber, I think the whole live crowd, the air would have went out if the last thing we saw was Daniel Bryan winning the chamber match. It finishes stayed the same.
Yeah.
And then the Raw one, I understood why they went on first because that really fell flat when they did when Jericho got hurt. And it was CM Punk, Miz, and nobody believed that Miz could possibly win. Everybody was just waiting for Jericho to get back up and sneak in, and when that didn't happen, that would have been another flat finish. So I saw the Cena Kane thing as kind of being an ending point, and maybe, I don't know, it didn't really feel like it should have been last, but out of the other choices and how the finishes were, it made sense to kind of send everybody home happy and actually have a kind of a climax for a finish instead of the two chambers were kind of went out on a down note. Even though the Daniel Bryan Santino thing was big, maybe that would have been good if they went off the air with Daniel Bryan celebrating and Santino, you know, the agony of defeat and maybe, you know, getting a push coming out later, which he just got squashed on Raw, so that's done.
Right, right. They always do a good job of following up, right? Boy, just an excellent job of following up when they're handed gifts. Like when they were handed a year ago, almost a year ago this week, they were handed the gift of Zack Ryder. And boy, over the past year, they've done so much to capitalize on that. But anyway, do you have a question for me on this lovely evening?
Yeah, my random question for you would be, what are they going to do with Zack Ryder at WrestleMania, since you brought it up? Is he actually going to have a match, or are they going to hold off? What's happening with Zack?
I would have to guess that they're going to hold off. I mean, if we are to believe his injuries, that's pretty serious. Getting thrown off the ramp by Kane is pretty serious. WrestleMania is not that far away anymore. I don't think we could believe it. If he'd be better in time to have to do a storyline and get the match in, I have a feeling that April or whatever, late April, I guess, whenever they do the next pay-per-view, he'll be taking on Kane. But I don't think it'll be WrestleMania.
Okay, so you don't think he's going heel against John Cena?
No, I don't.
Okay.
He referred to Cena as he's still his broski. On the last Z Long Island story, so.
Okay, makes
sense.
Not
that that's an indication of anything, but, you know.
Well,
right.
They're not going to let that girl get between them, you know, so makes sense.
Yeah.
All right, on to bigger and better things, TNA. What did the show start out with?
I'm glad you asked. It started out with Bobby Roode coming to the ring wearing a light gray suit with a light purple dress shirt and sort of a, I don't know, like a kind of a light bluish purple tie, looking dapper. And he chugs his way out to the ring, and Tanay and Taz talk about Sting's tweet that he posted this past week, simply saying, I'm done, and then various TNA personalities reacting to it, including Mickey James in the most half-assed way possible. She reacted to it like a cartoon character or something. You know, like, excuse me, mister, what's going on here? Kind of thing. I wonder if that's part of her punishment for daring to speak out against Hogan. Hey, you have to make the world's dumbest tweet. But anyway, Rude comes to the ring, and I said this last week, but for God's sake, he takes like 3 minutes to get to the ring. You know, everybody talks about how long it takes The Undertaker to get to the ring, but Bobby Roode could fucking pick up the pace a little bit, you know?
Yeah, he's working by the minute, I guess. They did the recap to open up the show, and I'll just say this: they showed the thing from last week with Roode beating down Sting, and my wife says, they need to bleed less on this show. And then she looks and then says, that's my one comment for you. They need to bleed less. So,
agreed.
Not that the ladies don't like the blood. And that was just a little trickle from Sting. So that's all she had to say about this show. Quit bleeding, people.
It really lessens the effectiveness of blood when just little trickles of blood show up everywhere. So I'm kind of feeling her on that, but, so Roode grabs the stick and talks about his TNA title reign and how great he is, but he says the greatest accomplishment of his career and his life is going to end up being ending Sting's career, which he takes full responsibility for what he did last week. He runs through a list of Sting's opponents like Harley Race, Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, Vader, Luger, and said that he was the only man who could lay claim to ending Sting's career. And actually, no, I'd say Father Time had a little bit more to do with it, Bobby. But anyway, Roode says he's calling a truce and says he wants Sting to remember, you know, when he says goodbye tonight, don't let the door hit you on the bleep on the way out. Which is the first of at least two bleeps on this episode, so I was very happy about that. Your thoughts on his mic work?
Yeah, he's okay. I don't know. It's same dog and pony show with Roode. He's good at it. He's not great. He gets his point across. All right. I don't know. He's not the centerpiece in my eyes, but
he's...
They don't have, you know, unless you want to say Bully Ray is the option, he's the only heel option right now. So he's all right.
I'm back to where I was on week one of our audio. I just don't feel like he's world title guy, you know? I feel like he's one step below that. But you could probably come back right back around at me, who's better? And I don't know that either.
Canyon.
I don't know. But in any event, the Direct Auto Insurance twins are bickering backstage about which one of them lost the match for the team to lose the tag team titles to Joey Maggs. Matt Morgan talks about how they're the two most dominant men in TNA history, and tonight they need to win their belts back. Crimson says he's all in. God, Crimson sucks, man. He just really sucks. He can't talk. He can't wrestle. I'd say he's bottom three in the company. We always talk about Velvet Sky being terrible. I think Crimson's right up there with her. You know?
Yeah. I love how you can be the two most dominant men in the company without a singles title between them. So,
right?
You know.
They're just lost.
I guess if being dominant
means... They literally
means,
just lost. You know, how dominant is that?
Yeah, I don't get it. Like, I hate it when guys say that when you're not, like, the top guy. Like, just you look stupid. It's like, I'm the best guy out there. You know, I just got beat. Really? Well, did they cheat to beat you? No, they beat you fair and square. And then they beat them fair and square again tonight.
Yep. Yeah, so much for being dominant there. and Crimson is still undefeated.
Why does Matt Morgan have dog tags on? Are those Crimson's dog tags? I thought he was the military guy.
Crimson is indeed the military guy. Morgan is just the goofy weirdo who happens to be big. So
okay, well he was sporting the dog tags John Cena style, so I don't know if he was a Marine too.
You know how many people who are only like casual people, like or like my mom or something, who doesn't really watch. She just like kind of checks it out from time to time because she knows I'm into it, and they all ask me the same thing. Oh, was John Cena in the military before he started wrestling? And then you have to explain, well, no, but he kind of does it, and yeah.
He was kind of a no-limit soldier at the beginning of his career, so.
He's a true soldier. He don't die. He keep rolling. Nah, 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 nah. That's all I got. I'm sorry. But yeah, the show moves on at a frenetic pace. Literally, we're getting segment, segment, segment. We're going right bam, bam, bam. So we go to Joey Maggs beating Morgan and Crimson once again to retain the tag team titles in about 10 minutes. Once again, Crimson is still undefeated. This was a pretty good match, probably better than the pay-per-view match, because why buy the pay-per-view, you know?
Yeah.
Not only are you going to get the match again, you're probably going to get it better.
Yeah, Mike Tenay was nice enough to tell us that Crimson and Samoa Joe are two of the best men in TNA at bringing MMA into their offense, which was their cheap plug for the MMA after the show, which I'm like, okay, Joe does a few moves. Crimson, I didn't really see anything besides, I guess, looking big and, you know, cut because you're cutting weight. I guess that's MMA for you.
I guess. I'm glad you brought that up, though, because Becky happened to be listening at that point in the show, and she just kind of rolled her eyes like, oh, they're trying to capitalize on MMA success. And I was like, yep. They got to hitch their wagon to that deal, you know. But also, I'm glad you mentioned it because literally throughout the entire episode, on the bottom right-hand side of the screen was a countdown, 2 hours counting down to this new MMA show that they hyped last week with that weirdo that I've never heard of before who's hosting the show. Well, they treated as a bigger deal than Brandon Jacobs until the end. It felt like they were counting down to the end of the world or something. I was really scared that the clock would hit zero and I would just sort of like spontaneously combust or something. It was very bizarre that it was on the screen the whole time.
Yeah, I thought it was either that or Chris Jericho was jumping to TNA.
Yeah. Yeah, you realize, like, wait a minute, that countdown is going into the middle of the show. Something strange is happening here. But, nope. I'm just counting down to the start of a stupid show that I'll never watch. But, yeah, so the match was pretty good. Ended with the combination snapmare elbow drop thing on Morgan. See, Morgan taking the job so that Crimson can stay undefeated because God knows we have to protect him. All the millions of dollars of potential he's fucking got. And before they go to commercial break, they hype Brandon Jacobs' return to Impact Wrestling. I believe these shows were taped back-to-back, so he wasn't really returning. He was just staying there, but you know, whatever. You don't have to know that. And coming back from break, we get Brandon Jacobs moseying on down to the ring. He tells everyone who he is and why he's relevant, which is kind of funny because he's treated as a celebrity, but yet he has to tell people who he is.
Right. What do you do after you win a Super Bowl? Come to Impact Wrestling, baby!
Unfortunately, I'll never win a Super Bowl, so I don't know. I'll have to take his word for it.
Apparently Disney World was full.
I think he's lucky that he did win the Super Bowl, because if he hadn't, There's no way Coughlin would have allowed this to happen. You know, I listen to Miami Talk Radio all the time, Levitard and Jorge Sedano, and, you know, whenever they have giant players on, they can only be on for like 10 minutes because they're on Coughlin time. He literally won't let them talk for any longer than that. He's just a very strict dictator type, so kind of weird that he's letting it happen at all, but you know there's some Super Bowl leeway, I gotta believe. So, there's that. Says he was there last week with his drinking buddy, James Storm. If ever there was an odd couple, man, it's Jacobs and James Storm. They, yeah. Not the pairing I would expect, but whatever. Bonded by alcohol, I guess.
Says, yeah, they would be the guys sitting at the other opposite ends of the bar, but by the end of the night would be singing karaoke together.
Just arm in arm singing like, we had joy, we had fun, we had seasons in the sun, you know, whatever. So
yeah, a little Grease Lightning, something.
Nice. I can see Jacobs, like, snapping his fingers, you know, tell me more, huh? Reese was on tonight, so.
I was watching a little NBA All-Star game, but Brandon Jacobs had to let us know that he was in Bully Ray's backyard, but he's calling him out to the yard. So apparently he saw Undertaker in 2002. So.
Oh, God. Then maybe he overstepped his bounds by stepping over the rail, but that doesn't excuse Bully Ray for spitting in his face. Said he was back one more time to finish some unfinished business, you know, getting his hands on Bully Ray. So Bully Ray comes on out, calls him Brenda, ha 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 ha, puts over his calves. I forgot to mention it last week, but that was the first thing he did. Talked about his calves. And then ran down resumes, which I thought was funny. You're a Super Bowl champion. Well, I'm a 23-time tag team champion. Implying that he was better because of that, which is funny.
Yeah, I've only lost it 24 times. No big deal. Because Super Bowl, you win it, and then, you know, it starts over. You win a tag belt, and you're a former champion. I won it 23 times. And I lost it 23 times, but let's not talk about that.
Exactly.
Brandon Jacobs, what, plays for New York. Bully Ray's from New York. Brandon Jacobs bakes cakes. Bully Ray eats them. I don't remember what it all was.
Right. It was pretty funny. Good mic work by Bully Ray. Being the pseudo-tough guy, chicken shit heel. I always loved that character. Said he'd love to beat the crap out of the Super Bowl champion, but he's got a match later in the evening, so he has to focus on that. Jacob says, well, if you're not coming into the ring with me here, I'll go out and meet you there. So he chases Bully Ray to the back. This was pretty solid mic work by Jacobs. I expected a lot worse. So I know this is a case of lowered expectations, but I have to give it a thumbs up. It was pretty solid from him.
Yeah, I liked it. He's always been a loudmouth. You know, the guy is either bragging or has an excuse. There's no in between with him. Chased Bully Ray out of the ring. I think he got caught in the ring ropes getting out or something because they did a long panaway shot. So I don't know what happened there.
They did.
Yeah, it was like something happened. So instead of just splicing it, they was like, let's show the crowd for like 4 seconds while he gets untangled. So, I don't know what happened there.
Standing there pretending to be afraid and then a crowd shot. Yeah, it was pretty awkward.
Yeah, so good stuff there. We go to commercial. We come back from commercial. We have James Storm, Brandon Jacobs, and Swamp Thing hanging out backstage. They got a plan.
Yeah. Which was whispered and communicated to Jacobs at rapid speed. I know I can talk pretty fast at times, but James Storm was setting some kind of world record for whispering that into Jacob's ear. Could have spent a little bit longer pretending to tell him what your plan was. Just saying. And then we go to Zema Ion beating Alex Shelley in about 4 minutes. Solid match, but the highlight was outside the ring, where Austin Aries makes his way out with a huge bag of popcorn, helpfully labeled popcorn, and some, I don't even know what it was, Merlot?
I don't know. Taz butchered about 5 different kinds of wine in his Brooklynisms, however they call it in Red Hook, yeah, his Merlot. Cabernet,
yeah.
Or whatever, yeah. Joey Numbers probably got it for him.
Yeah, he's my hookup. But, yeah, popcorn and wine is an interesting combination. I'll have to try someday, or not. Yeah, Aries mocking the action in the ring. Pretty funny stuff. He's really great. The match itself was okay. Ended with Shelley getting a face full of Zema Ion's hairspray. And then he hit his finisher for the victory. Solid stuff overall. Your thoughts here?
Yeah, Zema Ion did the old put the hairspray down his pants. Is that hairspray in your pocket? Or are you just happy to see me? He spun the ref around. I don't remember what happened. Yeah, pulls it out of his crotch, sprays him. Hits a muff dive finisher for the win. I'm not really sure. Shelley's like on his knees, and Zema Ion kind of does a Bronco Buster into a roll up. So I wasn't really sure how that was supposed to hurt, but it worked.
Yeah.
I guess. Not the only crotch maneuver used on this show, as we'll see later.
Indeed. I'll tell you, I don't know how many times I've fallen for the old hairspray in the crotch trick. It gets me every time, man. But anywho, we go to commercial with Ion gesturing to Aries that he's going to take the belt from him. So, they packed like a whole lot of stuff in that first half of the show there. It was just boom, boom, boom action. And so now it's time to come down a bit. And so we get a video package of the Gunner-Bischoff family feud. And then backstage with Garrett Bischoff talking about how he will not be deterred by his father's actions. No matter what anybody says about him or no matter who tries to get in his way, he's going to stay in the impact zone and he's going to be resilient. He's going to be fighter guy. Hulk Hogan shows up and sprinkles his magical retard dust and nothing makes sense after that point to me. He asks at one point if Garrett knows what time it is. Does he need a watch or something? I don't know what the fuck he's talking about. I never know what Hogan's talking about anymore. He's just like comically bad.
There's a bullseye on your back, Jack, because of your father.
I hope you understand just what kind of things are coming around, dude. Like, what?
Yes, every Hogan promo should have the blue cage in front, and it would make sense. Otherwise, it's crazy babble.
I mean, he's always been giving these nonsensical cocaine-soaked promos, but they just worked better in the 80s, you know? It's kind of sad.
Should they have Borash follow him around and play his Mean Gene so he can say, you know something, JB, and then maybe it would flow better?
Yes. Yes. Yes, it would. He's always better playing off of somebody, you know? And Garrett Bischoff doesn't count because that guy sucks. You want your other person for the bottom three in TNA, it's Garrett Bischoff. There we go. Garrett Bischoff, Crimson, and Velvet Sky. That's my bottom three, and I'm sticking to it. In any event, the moral of the story here is Hogan is trying to warn Garrett that you're in for big trouble or something, I guess. I don't know. Let's move on.
Yeah.
The boys in the back are all against them.
What's that?
The boys in the back and the politics are all against him. He's got to watch his back.
The powers to be are working against him.
Yeah, keep raising that. Keep raising the bar and getting over to the mountaintop. Put the headlight on the top of the Porsche. Float the yacht through the mountaintop, and you'll get there, Garrett.
Yeah. We go to the leader of the fashion club, Madison Rain. Actually, what I did last week proved just how good of a friend I am to Gail Kim. Because, like, I totally wanted to provide her with competition. And I'm sure she appreciates that. Real subtle work by Madison Rain here. I have no idea that she's going to turn against Gail at some point. It's just a total mystery to me, you know?
Yeah. Also, I liked how they tied in. They asked her about Sting, and she said she hoped Sting was gone because he hasn't been fair to her, which went from, you know, about a month ago. It's like, I'm glad they kind of tied up that loose end. Like, she hates him, and she has a reason to. So,
nice
they sprinkled that in.
I mean, I might mock the storyline, but I really like Madison's work. I think she's really impressed me. Mic work is good. Ring work is okay to solid. She gets a thumbs up from old Dusty. And you know I'm difficult to please. So then we go back to the ring. Gail Kim beating ODB in about 6 minutes. Eric Young is at ringside for some hilarious comedy. Because I'm wrong opinion, man. Come on, Matt. Defecate in my mouth. Defecate in my mouth. That tastes great. I'm wrong opinion, man. I love Eric Young. Anyway.
Yeah, not the best match. Yeah, stupid Eric Young running around the ringside, taking everybody's eyes off the action. Madison comes out. ODB gets the flash from EY. ODB sat on the top turnbuckle, grabbed Gail Kim by the hair, and gave her like a 10 head slam, not into the turnbuckle, but into her crotch, because we know that ODB apparently has a titanium plate in her pelvic area, much like Lex Luger's forearm back in 1994. Gail Kim wins with the Snitsky special. And Madison comes in the ring to celebrate, and they are uneasy friends. So the tension,
actually,
you can cut
ODB,
it with the knife gorilla.
ODB's penis is made of solid gold. So.
And they sell the solid gold on commercials in the Impact Zone. Yeah.
Indeed.
Gold coin.
We're choking down Madison Rain, turning on Gail Kim at some point. I hope for fantasy TNA purposes it will happen in a match against Rosita and Sarita. Kind of invested in that, but we know either way it's going to happen. We'll probably be to ODB and Eric Young, actually. But whatever.
I'm hoping for a Brooke Tessmacher tag team combination title win, and Ric Flair getting a title match at the next pay-per-view, just sneaking his way in. But anyway... On to everybody's favorite redneck, AJ Styles.
Yeah, biggest New Orleans Saints fan in the world. And says he's ready to move on. He's Christopher Daniels, the Brown Blazer, and Sam Winchester. They've gone down the wrong path. They're not going to take him with him. He's focused now. He wants to get a championship belt. That's what's important to him. He's moving on past those other two guys. Not really, but that's what he thought at the time. So then we go to a video package detailing Jesse Sorensen's injury, complete with an interview from his snaggletooth mother, which was not distracting in any way whatsoever. And the announcers hyped a Get Well hashtag for Jesse. This could be huge if they play their cards right. Yeah, it's been into a huge push for him.
If he is actually ever able to come back, I guess I don't know how long it's going to last, and you know how TNA is. They're going to forget about him. If in two months he's not making progress, it's going to be gone. I don't know if he's going to get as many tweets as Hulk Hogan got cards when Earthquake squashed him back in the day, but hope Jesse Sorensen gets well.
Well, we need Tugboat to lead the charge. We need the Get Well Jesse Tugboat campaign. That's the only way
sure,
we can get this shit done.
I'm sure Fred Ottman's not busy, and he has a Stormtrooper's helmet someplace in the Impact Zone that could bedazzle up.
I know we already did ask a random question, but I'm going to throw a second one in there. Let's say Fred Ottman never trips, never falls on his face, and the helmet never comes off. Let's say that angle goes the way it was scripted, okay? Explain to me how it could have gotten over anyway. It's fucking Tugboat in a cape with a glittered Stormtrooper helmet talking in the Black Scorpion voice. How is that going to get over anyway?
You know, they probably just do the match. And we, you know, if he doesn't trip, we probably never hear from him again. Or he's just repackaged as a guy. Instead, he probably made more money on the deal by tripping because he was going to get the match anyway. And then what'd they do? Probably 3 or 4 months with the clumsy Uncle Fred or whatever it was, where they actually scooped it basically. So, I mean, I don't know what his deal was, but he actually probably got more notoriety because of the fall and what happened afterwards. But, yeah, that was not going to get over either way. So, I mean, if you're going to bring the guy in, like, was the Stormtrooper mask, like, they thought, hey, you're going to keep that on while you wrestle? You're not going to, like, do it like a Vader mask where he had the mask on and then he takes it off and he has a second mask? I don't know. And he's Tugboat. He looks like Tugboat.
Right. He's limited no matter what. He could have just been dressed like a normal wrestler, and he would have been doomed from the beginning because he's Tugboat, and that's all he is.
Yeah, he could have been like the caboose. He could have been the caboose or something. I don't know, you know, they brought Ray Trailer, our Big Boss Man, in, and I still remember the whole the Guardian Angel where he's. They show him going around, and he's the do-gooder and everything. I don't know. I can't, for whatever reason, I can't forget about that. But I love when they bring guys in. They did that. They did, you know, the barber became the butcher. You know, it's like, let's change it to a similar occupation. He's not the janitor. Right. He's the custodial engineer.
Right, exactly. He's that Tugboat. He's the battleship or something, you know?
That'd have been an upgrade, though. WCW never upgraded your gimmick.
No, they bury their guys right off the bat. Like, Brutus went from being a respectable barber to being a butcher. I mean, who wants to get their hair cut from a butcher, you know? I don't.
Yeah, he doesn't even use scissors. You can't get a straight cut with a meat cleaver.
It's just not going to happen.
A little off the top. That's how Sting got his flat top. Butcher, come over here.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know how he did the rat tail. He must have did that on his own.
Stylish. The early 90s were a fashion disaster, I have to say.
Yeah. Back to the show.
Neon colors and shit.
Oh, man, completely loved early 90s WCW. Vader, I was a little stinger. I had the rat tail. My mom made me have the rat tail for a while, and then I got sick of it one day and cut it off on my own. She was not happy.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and I had the three steps on the side. Not two, three steps.
I had two.
I had a bigger head.
Yeah, I guess. You still do. You think you're the star of this audio.
So they say.
You're sadly mistaken. But
anyway. My contract says otherwise.
You are making a large portion of Kevin's contract secretly, so I can't argue with you, actually.
I just got another case of Yuengling today. He's got to be starving.
Nice. We move along to AJ Styles beating Robbie in the television title match, but it was by DQ, so the title does not change hands. It happened to be a DQ because Sam Winchester comes out and aggressively attacks Styles, causing the disqualification. Even the Brown Blazer seems surprised by Winchester's actions. Your thoughts on this?
Fist pump it up for Robbie E. and Big Robbie T. The one thing I took out of this match was AJ used Austin Aries' submission finisher as a transition move. And
yes,
I'm like, don't they talk about this? Isn't that stuff that guys fight about when they get backstage? What the hell are you doing? It was identical to the that Nick Vice, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Chess, whatever it was. Anyway, yeah, AJ uses it, and Robbie E gets out of it. So kind of makes Austin Aries look like a dork. Or maybe that he's better at the move. I don't know. Shouldn't have happened.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe. Is that the story they're trying to tell? But they should only tell that story if they're wrestling each other, you know? So I kind of object to it, and if I were Aries, I'd be pissed.
Yeah, I would throw my popcorn at him.
I saved the wine, though, you know. Keep that to myself. Another kind of dirty finish, but I don't mind that so much during the television shows. Robbie E, I love his character, but he is an ugly person. And I know that's the pot calling the kettle, but he's pretty ugly. So just had to throw that out there. But then it is time for the main event of the evening, which Mike Tenay called the tag team main. And I hate Mike Tenay, and I want him to die. So there's that. But this match ends with Storm and Hardy beating Bully Ray and Kurt Angle in the no disqualification tag team match in about 15 minutes. My first impression of this match is, I know somebody said this on the Bob Dylan Fan Club Appreciation Board, but Angle has the worst posture I've ever seen for a wrestler. He's sort of like slumped over, like he's like leaning, and his like legs are bowed in a little bit. It's just very bad posture.
He's he kind of reminds me of Baron von Raschke on the old early 90s AWA that runs on ESPN. He's looking a little crippled up. Like he's been around the block a little bit. Apparently, maybe just those other Olympians kind of tied him in a knot. I don't know.
Maybe. Since I don't review matches, I'll just mention that, of course, Brandon Jacobs gets involved in this match, of course. The finishing sequence ends with Ray and Jacobs staring each other down in the three-point stance. Storm slaps Bully Ray. Ray then staggers over to Jacobs' general area, and Jacobs is able to chokeslam him through a table that had been set up. Storm then covers Ray for the pinfall victory. Jacobs and Storm then celebrate their match with some brewskis with a few of their rowdy friends. And Jacobs grabs the microphone and says, "Sorry about your damn luck." Your thoughts on this?
Decent match. I thought the whole, it was definitely all about Storm, Bully Ray, and Brandon Jacobs. Jacobs was out during the whole, at the very beginning of the match. So Bully Ray was always kind of watching over his shoulder, watching what was going on with that. Angle and Hardy, not much really happened with those guys throughout. During the match, they did announce that AJ Styles, he wants a gauntlet match with Kazin, the Brown Blazer, because he's a Saints fan, and who dat, and he's going to go get him. So Babyface gets a gauntlet with the heels next week because he wanted it. Kind of weird. Finish was decent in this one. Besides, Bully Ray seemed to have to kind of just stand there for like 3 seconds while Brandon Jacobs raised his hand and Bully Ray jumped for the chokeslam. It'd be nice if Jacobs actually would have hit him a couple times and then plants him instead of the whole, Storm pushes him in and then he's got to just stand there. So, throw a punch or a kick. It's not a big deal. And, Storm pours some beer over Bully Ray. So I guess we're getting Storm Bully Ray at the next pay-per-view, and then we're getting, Hardy Angle, so that kind of sets up the top six guys on the card, and then wherever they shoehorn Garrett Bischoff in. I liked after the match, they go back, gotta go to the back, Doug Dillinger knocking on Sting's door, says it's showtime, okay, so that was nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet he misses working with Goldberg, but Sting makes his way out to the ring. He's wearing just a plain old Sting t-shirt this week, still rocking the sunglasses indoors, but has no official MMA gloves, so his hands look naked out there. I thought that was kind of sad. You knew it was over when he wasn't wearing the gloves, you know what I mean? That was my signal that he was really retiring.
Yeah, he looked a little odd out there. Wearing a white t-shirt, so retiring away. Big Bad Sting going away. Real Estate Steve stepping in. He's done. Except Bobby Roode just couldn't let sleeping dogs lie, as they say. Interrupts Mike Tenay just beside himself that Bobby Roode, we know he's the leader of the Shellfish Generation, but he should just, the audacity of this man to interrupt Sting's moment like this. Hasn't he done enough, Dusty? Hasn't he done enough?
Apparently he didn't think so, because he had to pour salt on that wound, my friend, coming out there and faking tears. Fake wiping tears from his eyes. He said he felt he need to be by Sting's side during this moment of need when Sting tells the world that Bobby Roode is the better man. Seriously, he should have just stayed away and let Sting retire, you know? I mean, hindsight is 20/20, but maybe hindsight is 50/50. I don't know, whatever. But he provokes Sting with his various brand of insults. Sting says Bobby's name several times. Tells him that he didn't win the war. He did not win the battle. He said that Roode helped him to wake up. He removes his glasses and puts on some face paint, making him look like some kind of creature that even Jeff Hardy would be afraid of, I have to say. Goes full Joker on Roode. Says he isn't going halfway anymore. Says he's going to get his boots on. Says he's going to get his tights on. Says he's going to put his paint on. And he's going to go to Victory Road. And he's going to kick the living crap out of Roode. And then drops the Joker act for the last time. And for the last line. And says ta-ta for now. Roode looks mortified by this whole situation. He goes to attack Sting, but Sting catches him and kicks him in the crotch. Roode writhes in pain, and Sting tells him to follow the yellow brick road to Victory Road, and then throws the microphone at him. Your thoughts on this?
It's showtime. Ta-ta. No, it's showtime. Ta-ta. Is it showtime? It's showtime. I don't know what happened there. Following the yellow brick road, is Kevin Nash signed or are they bringing Oz back?
God, I hope not.
Well, he cut his hair, so maybe the gimmick's coming back. Master Blasters, maybe Master Blasters, Blade Runners reunion. I thought this was okay. the whole Joker sting does nothing for me. I guess he can sell some more of those insane T-shirts, people thinking they're paying for Heath Ledger. I don't know. Like, it made sense. I didn't like that it was black. Like, I don't know. I thought it was weird that it was just, like, plain black paint. I would think, you know, Sting, you know. Yeah, he could have had, like, two different colors or something. Or, you know, like, throw some blue on and throw some white on so he can do the impact advertisement on his face. Yeah, I just thought the black was weird. It kind of reminded me of Roddy Piper, Bad News Brown. But
oh, yeah, bad memories there. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, weird. I liked he got rude back for the ball kick. You know, right in the yam bags there, Mike. That was nice. So the whole Yellow Brick Road thing, really weird. Like, it was, I know Sting's weird, but it was like, really? We're quoting Wizard of Oz. I guess
just
it's okay.
Just because it had the word road in it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that was the only reason. I mean, if he had thought of something else that had the word road in it, I'm sure he would have used that too, you know?
Yeah.
Very awkwardly shoehorned in. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wish he could have done a little Chris Farley, David Spade, ROAD. That's a funny word, but... yeah, I don't know.
I did that in school once. I'll never forget this. I did it in school once. Like, you know what? It is kind of a weird word. And I started, like, thinking about it. And I'll never forget this girl yelled at me, "Don't do that to yourself, Dusty! Don't think about it that hard." So,
yeah.
It is a weird
It was okay. So that I guess the final half hour set up the top three matches for the pay-per-view that nobody's going to buy, and we're going to get rematches for in a couple weeks on Impact, 4 days after the pay-per-view. So that's nice. Overall, halfway decent show. I mean, they planted the seeds. I don't know if we're going to get Gail Madison at the next pay-per-view. Almost be nice if they would hold it off one more and maybe do Gail against, I don't know, somebody, Velvet Sky again, Mickie James.
Maybe that's where
not.
They lose the tag belts. Maybe they lose the tag belts at Victory Road and then go into the next pay-per-view with the title match.
Oh, yeah, that could work. Yeah, Brooke Tessmacher's probably has another Hooters contest to promote, so it'd help if they get the tag belts on her. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. They did good with Popcorn Aries and Zima Ion.
Mm-hmm.
AJ and the Two Stooges was okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a like less than 5 minutes of Garrett Bischoff total, so that's a plus.
Yeah.
No Eric Bischoff, always great. No Ric Flair, a little disappointing, although he hasn't done much on any of the shows anyway. We still got guys missing in action that I don't know if they're getting paid, but we got a lot of guys collecting a paycheck, I think, and sitting home, which I guess is fine, but I think they've kind of decided we're going to take the people in the top five or six matches for the pay-per-view, and that's all who gets on the show. So I guess if that's their prerogative, that's fine. I guess I would just say maybe mix in a few more guys, even if they don't have matches at the pay-per-view, and maybe make them the setup men.
Agreed. I appreciate the focus. They've been very, very focused and driven in the main storylines lately, and I have to give them a thumbs up for that. But, yeah, you're right. I need to see a few more mid-card guys. I need to see the Pope and what he's up to, you know? Give me a few more things.
Yeah, we should get a...
I guess that's where the focus on Brandon Jacobs is counterproductive, you know? That time could have gone to someone you can build up, you know? Doesn't have to be the Pope. Can be whoever the fuck. Devon, I don't know. A lot of guys. Abyss, you know? Could be anybody. Just build up some of your talent that's always there instead of focusing on these pseudo-celebrities that only serve to make your regular roster look bad. So, that part irks me.
Yeah, I said it's the only guy they really used as a setup guy was Alex Shelley. Well, and I guess ODB. But it'd be nice instead of the whole the tag champs
you know, Joey Maggs against the insurance guys, if, you know, they would have the insurance guys breaking up a little bit more with maybe some dissension against another tag team, but still getting a win to stay number one contenders, like they fight Pope and Devon, if those get, well, I guess they're not a tag team anymore, but I don't know, whoever, pick two guys, slap them together, you know, Shannon Morin, whoever, like, they still beat them, but there's those couple, you know, swipes where they almost blew it, or, hey, did you hit me on purpose, but they still pick up the win instead of, oh, we only have this other tag team, so you're going to be number one contenders for three straight weeks and argue. So,
right.
Wish they do stuff like that. You know, bring Kenny, bring Mr. Anderson back. You know, maybe AJ Styles beats him on the way to get to Kaz, or I don't know. Okay. Robbie E has the TV title, except that's not talked about. Even though it was in the match tonight, he's been non-existent. We need more Robbie E or Young, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, Robbie E's been pretty forgotten too, which is sad because he has a belt. You know, they should do more with him too. This is where they could rotate these mid-card guys they're not using. Put them up against Robbie E. Give him a match every week. They used to have Arn Anderson on every week defending the TV title, so I think they should kind of use that formula.
Yeah, we had Arn against, you know, he'd take on Tom Zink 1 week, the Z-Man.
Yep.
You know, so he didn't have to fight Dustin Rhodes every week on the show. He only fought him once a month, and they went to that time limit draw because Tony told us we were out of time, and tape machines were. And I wish the tape machines would be rolling during the break in case a finish happens. They could go back and show us. They never tell us that anymore.
Indeed. I mean, that's the power of the tapes. You know, they're able to show you things that you wouldn't see normally. So, God bless the tape machine. And God bless Tony Schiavone for telling us about it. We would have no idea. We'd be like, wait, what, the commercial? What? Are they wrestling? Did they stop wrestling? What's going on? But Tony Schiavone's there to tell us they are still wrestling. And that match could very well end without our knowledge. So, I mean, that's just common courtesy on Tony Schiavone's part. Good old-fashioned American common courtesy. You don't get that anymore.
He was a great man.
Plus, easily one of the top 100 announcers of all time, in my opinion.
Yeah, he's somewhere ahead of Mark Madden, behind Jim Ross.
Yep, that's pretty accurate. Any other thoughts on this show?
No, They're pushing towards a pay-per-view, even though I wish they would just do like super shows on Sunday night instead. Maybe, you know, get a 1.3 rating. But I guess they have a pay-per-view contract, so they're plugging away that way. I don't know. It's a broken business model that they're doing, but that's the way they've stayed, and I guess maybe they have to. So if they didn't show the matches again for free on TV. Mm-hmm. Maybe they could possibly get a few more people to buy, but when you always show it on TV the next time, there's no incentive. So even though they build it a pay-per-view, they get nothing out of it.
The pay-per-view model is completely outdated and serves no purpose anymore. It worked in the late 90s because wrestling was so hot that people would buy any old thing you threw at them. You could headline a show with Stone Cold versus Billy Gunn, and you'd get a million buys because everybody wants to see what the fuck Stone Cold is up to. Now, it's not like that. They should absolutely go to an all-free format. Have, like, Saturday night main event type shows and make those like the pay-per-view. So whenever their pay-per-view contract expires, I don't know what that is, I don't know how that works, they should get the fuck out of that contract. That said, they do an excellent job of building up matches, like I said. We know we got Sting Rude. We know we got Storm versus Bully Ray coming up. We know we got Angle versus Hardy. We know we got, Styles has still got to get his hands on Winchester and the Brown Blazer. Gail Kim and Madison Rayne are going to be angry with each other, so that'll be a match down the road. They're doing a good job of long-term booking, so I like that. I, you know, appreciate that, the planning and stuff, and it's been fairly entertaining most of the way, and I wish the Bischoff family and Hogan would go away, and I don't really like the Brandon Jacobs stuff, even though I thought the work he did was okay. So I'm going to give this show maybe a 5.5 or a 6.
Yeah, right around there. Slight thumbs in the middle, aiming, bending up a little bit. Nothing to brag about, but nothing to rip apart, because said Les Dear Bischoff is always a thumbs up. So that's it. I guess we will keep plugging along, and hopefully next week we get even less Dear Bischoff. Holding my breath.
Yes, indeed. All right. Well, for Matt Fanatic, for Dreamer, this is Dusty Giesing. This is Vince Dunbrand in TNA Audio number 7, and we'll try to do better next time. Peace.
But does Granny really hate the wrestlers? Hardly.